Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's stay on the Haiti story right now. Richard was just mentioning some of the things that New York City is doing to help, and President Obama came out a short time ago and spoke to reporters at the White House about what the federal government is doing. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
This morning, I can report that the first waves of our rescue and relief workers are on the ground and at work. The survey team worked overnight to identify priority areas for assistance and shared the results of that review throughout the United States government and with international partners who are also sending support. Search and rescue teams are actively working to save lives. Our military has secured the airport and prepared it to receive the heavy equipment and resources that are on the way and to receive them around the clock 24 hours a day. An airlift has been set up to deliver high-priority items like water and medicine. And we're coordinating closely with the Haitian government, the United Nations, and other countries who are also on the ground.
President Obama speaking at the White House within the hour. Joining me now, two relief experts, Dr. Erwin Redlener, the director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness with Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health, and the president of the Children's Health Fund, he is too, and Stephanie Bunker, the spokesperson for the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, who was also on yesterday's show as this was happening. Stephanie and Erwin, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
And Stephanie Bunker, can I get you first to comment on what President Obama just said? From the UN's perspective, is the United States doing the right things? Is it doing what it needs to do? I don't think we have Stephanie yet. Well, Erwin Redlener, why don't you comment on that?
Hello.
Stephanie, were you able to hear my question?
Yes, I did. I was very happy to hear what President Obama was saying. This kind of rapid response, big response, is exactly what we need to see. We need to see it not only from the United States, but from the other countries of the world. We've seen a lot of outpouring so far. A lot of countries are coming forward. And it's very important because we're going to need a lot of money in the short term, the medium term, and, of course, in the long term. So this is a crisis we have to deal with now and in the future.
Dr. Redlener, I know the airport in Port-au-Prince was not functioning. We heard President Obama there say U.S. troops are on the ground to secure the airport. But I gather the runways did not crumble as a result of the earthquake. What has to happen to allow planes to actually land there? Do you know?
Yeah, in addition to functioning runways and the tarmac that's relatively intact, you really need to have air traffic control systems in place. And our understanding is that the air traffic control tower was damaged, but that could be replaced fairly easily. And I think this has already happened by a portable, deployable air traffic unit that is already in place. And this is how the military will help coordinate a continuous flow of materials and personnel from all over the world. But those are the two things, an intact tarmac and a functioning air control system.
And Stephanie Bunker, we keep hearing that water is the first need. Obviously, pulling people out from the rubble if they're physically trapped. But then beyond that, right at the top of the list, water. Food would come next because you can survive for more days without food than you can without water. But why would the water in Haiti be undrinkable as a result of an earthquake?
Well, first of all, the first need is the search and rescue. The second need is actual medical treatment for those who have been injured.
Right.
The third need, very, very high up there, is water. Water in many parts of the world isn't necessarily drinkable. Damages can occur in earthquakes to the infrastructure, to any places that have piped water, can interrupt the water flow. The water is off, as far as we know, still in Haiti. And when that happens, people turn to alternate sources of water. And those alternate sources of water are certainly not necessarily clean. And that's what's going to make people sick quickly and, in either a very simple way, simple diarrhea, or in more serious ways. So that's why UNICEF is looking now to provide water sanitizing type of chemicals and whatnot for this emergency phase of the operation.
And listeners, we can take your phone calls from Haitian Americans or anyone on the relief effort in Haiti right now and the rescue effort, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. We'll also get to some underlying issues and why this happened, why so many Haitians are so angry at their government, so angry at the United States government, and whether the country can be rebuilt in a different way to prevent something like this from happening again if there's a future earthquake. 212-433-WNYC to talk about Haiti. 212-433-9692. So, Dr. Redletter, how do you get massive amounts of water to a country of 9 million people?
Well, this is first of all, the water situation in Haiti was not very good to begin with, even before the earthquake. So lots of water that people had access to has been chronically contaminated, and that's one of the reasons that lots of Haitians do experience chronic recurrent diarrheal diseases and worse. And so that's an ongoing problem, which has gotten worse because, as Stephanie was saying, what we have now is a situation where the water supply is actually turned off. We also have destruction of water purification and sanitation capacity, and that creates even more problems. But so now what to do about this? Well, there's two main things. One is you can actually deliver water, bottled water, water in tanks and so forth. That will do something. But purification of existing water supplies is the other thing that we can do. So water purification systems, which are portable, actually work, and they range from simple handheld devices that individuals can have to much larger scale water purification systems that can be flown in and set up to help make sure that there is that water supply that's available to as many people as possible.
And they were talking about new technologies on the takeaway this morning to help the people in Haiti, and one of the things that was mentioned was straws that
yes.
are pre-packed with water. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, and there's straws, there's devices that look like little electronic stirring devices that you could put into a glass of water and purify it. There's a lot of different ways of doing this, but this is all now. And by the way, the water question, as well as the medical and the search and rescue, we have to be very attentive to the scale of what's being provided. You know, as you pointed out, there's going to be millions of people who are affected. Is the scale of the response, whether it's food and water or medicine or surgical capacity, going to meet the need that is so overwhelming right now? And I think that's what one of the biggest concerns are underlying all of our efforts right now.
Well, I had a question about the straws in terms of scale. I mean, it sounds like a clever idea, but why not just pack water rather than all this plastic or paper or whatever the straws are made of holding little sips of water?
Right. I mean, that would not be my first choice, and I think it's just one of many different technologies that can be used. But we're going to need massive amounts of water, and you need water every single day for every single person. So straws are not going to do it. And I think this is why I think these portable, deployable water purification systems are going to be absolutely critical right now.
Yeah, I think that's right, too, because, I mean, when you start delivering actual water proper, I mean, it's just so bulky. So you can do bottled water that has its own problems. It's very expensive. It's very wasteful. You can do trucked water, tankered water. I mean, technologies that can simply purify water that's already there are very appropriate, including these straws.
Eves in Midtown. You're on WNYC. Eves, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. Well,
yeah,
what would you like to say?
Say thank you to our president first for his effort and his prompt response, and thank you to all the American people that already trying to help us.
Eves, do you have family in Haiti right now?
Yes, I do have family. I have one brother and one sister in Port-au-Prince. I haven't heard about them and about the kids.
Have you been able to get in touch?
Not really. I got in touch to somebody that told me about other member of the family, but not them.
And I hope you get in touch and that everything is okay. Thank you for calling us.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Nick in Cliffside Park. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I think we should learn something from Katrina and something from Haiti's history. Haiti's traditionally been a country where the people with the guns and the power screw the poor people in every way they possibly can, and they don't care about the lives of the poor people. We do. We see these disasters and our hearts bleed, and we're going to send billions of dollars worth of aid. And my concern is that we have to police the way the aid is distributed and put out into the field. Otherwise, the people with the guns and the money are basically going to steal it, hoard it, stockpile it, sell it, And what happens is the poor people we want to save, they're going to die anyway, because the problem in Haiti, fundamentally, the disaster aside, is that they have a broken culture. There's a culture of absolute total corruption, and unless we deal with that, and even if that means, we can't rebuild Afghanistan, we could rebuild Haiti, and it's our own hemisphere. That's what this disaster is an opportunity to do, is to rebuild the whole country from the ground up, and even if we've got to make it the damned 51st state, that country deserves to be rebuilt and put on the right path. Nick, the earthquake is a secondary problem at this point.
Nick, thank you very much, and you raised a couple of really vital points. And Stephanie Bunker from the UN, let me take the first one first, which is about the corruption, and I'm sure a lot of people are having this reservation before they, text their $10 to the Red Cross as they're being asked to do, or some other kind of donation, thinking, how do I know this isn't going to get into the hands of corrupt higher level or lower level officials down there, and it's not going to get to the people who need it anyway?
Well, that the corruption is an issue wherever you are in the world. And I will never sit here and tell you or the audience that nothing ever goes wrong, because that would be untrue. However, you have to consider that the organizations who are working there, the non-governmental organizations and the United Nations organizations, are the good NGOs are ones with track records. And they have those track records because they attract money year after year after year from both private donors and from governments. Governments are not stupid, and they are not going to dump their money year after year after year into agencies and programs that cannot account for the money that they're giving them. Do some things go wrong sometimes? Definitely. Is that a reason to do nothing? No.
And
I think there's been a lot of improvement in the political situation that your caller referred to. I think it's not perfect, but it's a heck of a lot better than it was a decade or two ago. I don't know, would you agree with me, Stephanie? Because I do think that we're dealing with a government that's been a lot more responsive and certainly a lot more amenable to trying to pick itself up by its own bootstraps to the extent that it has boots. It is working actively with the United Nations, and certainly the United States and other countries have invested a great deal of time there trying to help stabilize things.
Yeah, and if you look at the country's track record recently, it has been definitely more stable than it has been in the past. So I think it's not time to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
And on next side,
the other important point about this, Brian, is that that there's a significant amount of U.S. Military and State Department presence, and in terms of donations and contributions that come from the U.S. and U.S. citizens, I don't think people really have to worry very much. I do think the likelihood of those resources being diverted in bad ways is very, very limited, given the amount of attention being paid to what's happening there right now.
And on Nick's other point, here we are spending a gazillion dollars to try to do nation building in Afghanistan in the face of violent resistance. Haiti is a small country, one that's not going to resist a U.S. effort to rebuild it from the ground, and it's our neighbor. Could the U.S., never mind the U.N., but the U.S., undertake an effort relatively affordable to literally rebuild Haiti from the ground up with reasonable construction standards?
Well, the whole idea of hopefully what will be employed in when we deal with the recovery phase, which is going to be prolonged, painful, and expensive in Haiti, is this notion of rebuilding better than the conditions before were horrendous. It's the fourth poorest country in the world and the poorest in the hemisphere, as everyone knows. But the challenge will be whether it's the U.S. or the U.S. plus other countries, the rebuilding of Port-au-Prince and of Haiti in general will give us a tremendous opportunity to create a viable country going forward after this biblical-level catastrophe that they're experiencing right now. But, we could build it greener. We could build in economic opportunity for people. We can build in safe neighborhoods and appropriately constructed homes and appropriate hospitals and healthcare systems. It can be done, and I think it should be done, And I'm hoping that our country and others will have the appetite to do exactly that in the months and years that follow this acute phase of
and
the disaster.
Stephanie Bunker, yeah. Let me play a clip from one of your UN colleagues. This happens to be the UN special envoy to Haiti, known as Bill Clinton, talking to All Things Considered on NPR yesterday and actually expressing optimism or opportunity for the future.
It's a terrible economic setback, but depending on how the world responds to it and the Haitian people and the Haitian government respond to it, it might be a spiritual regeneration. I mean, this could intensify the determination of the people of Haiti to build their capital city back so that its buildings are more resistant to earthquakes, to hurricanes, and more energy efficient, to put more people to work in the rebuilding of the country, to find ways to avoid deforestation now and reforest the country, all the things we're trying to do. I believe that, look, this is a horrible tragedy. It's going to be devastating economically, and most important of all, an enormous number of people have died or been seriously injured.
President Clinton speaking yesterday on NPR. And Stephanie, it's a little hard for me to even hear talk about long-term rebuilding when we don't know if 10,000 people or 300,000 people are dead and how many are still trapped and need help. But I guess they have to think in those terms as well. Is he too sanguine?
No, I think Mr. Clinton, as you may recall, was also a special envoy during the tsunami. And he traveled around a great deal. It was in places like Sri Lanka and in Indonesia and Banda Aceh. And I think there is where he really became ultimately extremely convinced of the need to what he called to build back better. Let's not do the same thing and make the same mistakes again. Let's not build houses right on the coastline in Sri Lanka, for example. Let's move the houses back a little. Let's create a situation where the next time around people will be better off. And it's not impossible to do. And actually, there's been a lot of studies done in terms of like disaster risk reduction, which is a huge global movement, showing that there are many steps that can be taken that are actually very economical and very things that are very easy to do to make things safer next time around.
Let me take
it doesn't
one,
have to cost gazillions of dollars.
We're almost out of time, but one more call. Charles in Manhattan. Charles, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, my name is Charles Dorville. My mother, we all live here in Brooklyn for the past, since 1981, and my mother went to Haiti because it was too cold. She wanted to go to vacation. And what happened is that she stuck there, and I spoke to her on the phone yesterday at 8:15 after 12 hours trying to reach her. And now there's no way to get to her. I'm trying to call people. She's under the house, and as far as I could see the news, there's no one that could get her out of there because three-floor house is clapped on her.
Oh, my.
I'm wondering if I give the address or something. She's also an American citizen. How can people trying to rescue her before it's too late.
Dr. Redliner, how can we help Charles's mother?
There's an 800 number that Charles should call right away. It's a toll-free number, and I believe in Stephanie.
I try every number. It's on 311.
This is the 888-407-47.
47-47-47. I have that.
Yeah.
I can't even get through because it's so many people. I stood there for 2 hours. Yesterday, I couldn't get through, and I just don't know what to do.
And there are so many stories like this. My heart is breaking hearing you, Charles. Stephanie, what can he do? He knows where his mother is.
I think it's great that he knows his mother's alive. I think it's great that there's a number he can call. President Obama has said that one of the main focuses of the Americans will be in getting Americans out. If the number's not working, keep trying the number. I would certainly get in touch with my representative, in Washington, and get them on the phone. Get their staffers on the phone and talk to them and, you know, say, this is an American citizen. We know where she is. Please get her out.
Charles, that's the one.
Okay,
the one news.
Is there a way I could give her address in Haiti? Maybe they'll
go ahead.
Out or something.
Go ahead. Give
her
it out.
Her address is 300 Avenue Maglombois, and that's Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and Cap-au-Fay. If anyone that could help her, just get out. The three-floor building, she's underneath it. I spoke to her. She told me her legs are trapped. She couldn't feel it. She needed water and trying to save her. I'm trying to get there, and there's nowhere to get to Haiti, even to Santo Domingo. I can't. I even try to call the Red Cross and ask them to be a volunteer, and I pay for myself
and
to get there.
If you have Twitter, tweet it with a Haiti hashtag, if you know what that means, or get somebody to help you do that with the exact address as you just gave it, because a lot of people are looking at Twitter streams right now with the at Haiti hashtag. But give that address again on the air just in case anybody hears it and can do something with it.
The number of the house is number 300, but you probably don't see the number because it's on the ground. It was three floor, and it's Avenue Maglamboise. And that's what it is. For
Charles, my heart goes out to you. Good luck to you and your mother.
One other thing for Charles. Charles, do please call Senator Schumer's office and Senator Gillibrand and your representative in the House of Representatives and tell them all of this information. I would do it right now, and I would do, as I say, your representative and the two senators.
And tell them that you got this advice on the Brian Lehrer Show with Dr. Redlener and me and Stephanie Bunker. All right, Charles, good luck. And we're going to have to leave it there for now on Haiti. Of course, much more coverage during the day on WNYC. All day, Irwin Redlener, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Stephanie Bunker, spokesperson for the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Columbia University president Lee Bollinger next on the intersection between free speech and free trade.